Welcome back, friends. This is episode 21 of Chat with a Cat, the second take. The original take somehow got eaten by the machines, so we're going to give this another go. This is being recorded following sim number 5 of the 1983 season. That's season 4. I guess it's the 83-84 season. Anyway, we're after sim 5. We've had a couple of trades, and I think that has been kind of the big news of the season. So I want to talk a little bit about the trades, maybe some about trading in general, and then we'll take a look at, you know, teams. We've got roughly a week, a little less, before the trade deadline. And so as we usually do in these cases, you know, we'll want to take a look at who are the buyers, who are the sellers, who do we think are on the playoff bubble, what kinds of things can we watch as the season continues. But let's get started with trades, because I think the big story so far for this season had to be the Magic Johnson trade. If somehow you missed it, the Lakers made a move with the Suns. The Lakers got Magic Johnson. The Suns got Sidney Green, Larry Smith, Kelly Tripucka, and two Lakers first-round picks. And we're going to start with that trade, and I'm going to start with some of the reaction, backlash, whatever you want to call it. There was a lot of complaining when this trade was announced. Earlier in the season, the Suns mentioned that everyone was on the block. They commented they got about 80 offers on Magic Johnson, which seems about right. If you know that the three-time reigning MVP is on the trade block, it's probably GM malfeasance not to at least make an offer. There was a lot of feedback, feeling, you know, whatever you want to call it, that the Lakers did not get enough for Magic. My offer was better, whatever. Full disclosure here, I made an offer that I feel was probably a little bit better, but I can see why it was not attractive to the Lakers. I would also qualify that by pointing out that the offer that I made was assuming that things wanted to happen immediately rather than waiting till after 12-15. So could I have made a better offer if I had included players who I had signed in the offseason? Perhaps. But that's neither here nor there, because what I'd like to talk about first is the notion of I offered something better. And this is something that's very hard to adjudicate. It's something very hard to see, because it's difficult to know what sorts of things another GM is looking for. So what you think is a better offer, they may not think is a better offer. It's almost impossible to compare offers apples to apples, because draft picks are different, players are different, and so on and so forth. So what I wanted to do was take a look at the Magic Johnson trade, and then maybe compare it to some of the other trades that we've seen in the last season or two. The one that pops to mind for me is, and let's start with the George Gervin and Alex English trades from last season. George Gervin moved for points alone. Alex English moved for a single first round pick, and these are guys that were in their prime. Alex English had already led a team to a championship. Is he as good as Magic? No. Is he a number one option on a championship-winning team? He is. He's proven to be that. And so if you're asking, you know, what did the Suns get in return for Magic? Well, they got Kelly Tripucka, who's averaging, I think it's 22, 23 points a game. Let me go open it up real quick here. Currently, Kelly is averaging, currently Kelly is averaging 22 points a game. He's a career 23 point a game scorer. He's still on his rookie contract. He has been he's been solid since he was drafted. He's 24 years old, so we have no doubt that there's going to be many seasons. And something else that's important to remember is he's not going to be exposed to unrestricted free agency. He's going to be a restricted free agent when he comes up for free agency, meaning the Suns can guarantee, if they're willing to meet whatever price somebody else may put on him, that they keep him. They picked up two first-round picks, which admittedly, you know, when you trade a superstar for first-round picks, unless the first-round picks are coming from a third-party team, which generally they weren't going to this season. My sense is that teams, with one or two exceptions, which we'll talk about in a minute, with one or two exceptions, teams that have been accumulating first-round picks are not getting rid of them. And teams that are willing to give up first-round picks are teams that are already all in this year. So the picks are going to be pretty bad. You're not going to be able to trade a player and receive a top 10 pick. You're going to receive a bottom 5 pick, maybe bottom 10. But generally, by the time you trade the player and he improves the team he's going to, it's going to move it to a bottom 5 pick. So for those that are complaining, oh, those draft picks aren't going to be very good, I would ask, where else were the picks going to come from? A team that is bad generally is not going to trade away their picks for a player because they're bad. They want the draft capital that those players represent. And a team that is good will be willing to send picks, but that's because their picks are going to be bad. So then we look at, you know, kind of the filler in the sandwich, and that would have been the two forwards, Larry Smith and Sidney Green, that went through. Now, Sidney Green is a guy who is on his rookie contract. I think he is miscast as a small forward, and it looks as though he's already been moved to power forward with the Suns because he's got incredible rebounding skills but is a little bit lacking on offense. And, you know, he's averaging, you know, just 8 minutes a game. He's averaging 2.5 points. But he's a rookie. He's got 4 years to improve and get better. And, you know, he's already got a 100 defensive rebounding rating, meaning there's not going to be anybody better than him at defensive rebounding. So the Suns, on a long-term basis, have their defensive rebounder of the future. Because Green is just 23. He's locked up for 4 more years. And then they also picked up Larry Smith, who I think might be a little bit overrated based on, you know, you look at his ratings for rebounding, and he's got a 100 offensive rebound, a 99 defensive rebounding rating. The issue is his foul rating. If you look at what he's averaging on the season, he's averaging 25.5 minutes per game and 4.9 personal fouls per game, meaning you're not going to be able to keep him on the floor much longer than he's already on. And right now he's giving you 7 points and right around 8 rebounds. So the 199 rebounding ratings are a little bit misleading because you only get that for about half the game and he's fouling a ton. So is Larry Smith a great pickup? I would argue the answer is no. I think he can become better, but it's going to take probably 3 seasons of personal foul training. And by that time, he's 29 years old and coming out of his prime. So I don't know that that was a great asset, but it's not a horrible asset. He's a usable player for 20 to 25 minutes a game. Sidney Green is a rookie who in 2 seasons probably will be a starting caliber player on defense. He's probably got a way to go on offense. Kelly Trpiuka is a starting caliber offensive weapon right now. And then you've got some draft picks, which honestly you're probably going to use as lubrication to get other things done because the Lakers picks are not going to be very good. But could the Lakers have gotten much more? I'm not certain that they could. You know, they got Trpiuka, who I think maybe is not a superstar, but is at least a star. I think he will be a threat to make an all-star team or two in the next couple of years. And you got 2 quality forwards, and you've got 2 first-round picks. That's not nothing. You know, the problem is Magic is just absolutely amazing. And so, yes, the Lakers got the better side of his trade because they got the better player. Also, as some have noted, you can play Magic Johnson at power forward, which was kind of the position of need for the Lakers. They were overloaded at the small forward shooting guard between World Be Free, Kelly Tripucka, and Jamal Wilkes. And so this lets the Lakers kind of slot naturally into a team that is a strong contender. The caveat, if you're the Lakers, and it's something to bear watching out, is this is, yes, I know Magic Johnson is a young player at 24. This is a win now move, and here's why. Coming up in free agency this offseason, remember, this is unrestricted free agency, so if these players choose to go, they leave. And in order to keep all of these players, you're probably having to pay a max or a near max. You've got James Donaldson, Magic Johnson, World Be Free, and Brad Davis. And then on top of that, remember, they just picked up Norm Nixon, who was signed to a max last year. So now you're looking at five max contracts, and a couple of these aren't going to start at 25% of the cap. They're going to start at 30 or 35% of the cap. So you could very well see the Lakers at 150% of the cap if they try to keep everybody. And the other side of that, or I guess the continuing on that vein, they're not necessarily a young team either. Brad Davis is 28. World Be Free is 30. Jamal Wilkes is 30. So Magic is young at 26. James Donaldson is just about to enter his, or Magic is 24. James Donaldson is about to enter his prime at 26. But the rest of their team is older. So this year is probably the Lakers' best shot to win a title. Once free agency comes around, maybe they've got somebody poached. Even if they don't, they're kind of locked in with this roster. And I think in 2 years, age has eaten away at this roster enough that they're not a championship contender again. So at that point, do they try to flip Magic? I don't know. I think it's a great move for the Lakers this season. If they're willing to shell out a ton of money next season, I think it's a great move. But that's it. The Lakers bought themselves for sure a 2-year window, maybe a 3 to 4 year window. But as we've seen with the way teams trade and the way things move around, when you think you have a super team, other teams don't just give up. They rise up to come at you. I think the Warriors last season thought they had things made. And the Trailblazers traded for Dan Ranfield. And the Kings traded for Bernard King. And eventually, you know, the Kings had enough to get by the Warriors. We won't know how the Blazers-Warriors matchup went because the Kings knocked the Trailblazers out before they got there. But people didn't just roll over for the Warriors and get out of the way. And so, you know, I think it elevates the Lakers into co-favorites. If I were to handicap the Western Conference right now, I think the Warriors, Kings, and Lakers are all championship caliber squads. I think the Blazers have a puncher's chance, and I say that not because they're my team. I'm trying to be objective here. If you take a look at their point differential is on par with the Kings. It's a little better than the Lakers, but bear in mind the Lakers have only had Magic for a couple of sims, and I think when they got him, their point differential was about even, which means they've had a point differential of close to 10 or 12 since they picked him up. So that's a championship-level team. The Warriors have a differential of 9.3, the Kings 6.7, again, the Blazers 6.4. I think the Sonics, with a point differential of 5, have an outside shot. I think injuries are hampering them. But I think, you know, the Trailblazers and Sonics are kind of lurking in a position where they could be a move away from getting into that group of three. Out in the East, I think there's a team. It's the Bucks. I don't care about the Nets' record being what it is. I don't care about the Bulls. Look at their point differentials, and I kind of hammered on this last season. You know, the Nets with a 3.8 point differential, the Bulls with a 4-point differential. I can expect them both to land in the 48-49 wins category. I expect the Bucks to finish with 68, 69 wins. The Bucks are going to come out of the East barring injury or barring a major trade. In the West, it's a lot closer. I would give the inside track to the Warriors until I see where the Lakers' point differential shakes out. I think it might wind up being the Lakers. I don't know if they can run the Warriors down because the Warriors have a big enough lead and home court advantage makes a big difference. And I can't give it to the Warriors outright over the Kings because we just saw with basically the same rosters, the Kings beat the Warriors last year. And as we'll get to in a minute, the Kings have gotten better. So, just looking at the way that things are going, I think you have four legitimate championship contenders, maybe two or three teams that have a puncher's chance. There's a couple of strong playoff teams, but are they going to win it all? I kind of doubt it. So having said that, let's turn our attention back to trades, and we're going to take a look at the other big trade that happened, and this was the Kings and the Celtics. The Kings picked up Vinnie Johnson, they brought back Alan Lavelle, and they got Andrew Toney from the Celtics, and it cost them John Sundvold. Again, this is a young player who's not there yet, but who is is definitely a player with some potential. George McGinnis is an aging player. Marvin Webster and Rich Kelly are okay. Wes Matthews, eh. Kings first round pick, eh. You can tell what the Celtics are doing here. Not that it wasn't obvious before. The Celtics are trying to force as many stats into Ralph Sampson as they can possibly get. Vinny Johnson and Andrew Toney were taking shots away from Ralph. That's kind of, that's just the way it is. And, I don't blame the Celtics for wanting to, push Ralph. He's showing that he's definitely got the potential for a star turn. I do wonder if his stats are a little bit overinflated. I've talked before about anti-calorie stats. Do I think Ralph could put up the 29 and 12 that he's putting up right now on a team that had more players around him? I don't, simply because, and I think Doug touched on this in one of his podcasts, there's only one ball. There's just not enough room to have five 20-point-a-game scorers on a team. There aren't that many possessions in a game. There aren't that many shots to go around. And so you just can't have that. You look at your top teams and look at the weight of the scoring. If we go, let's start with the Warriors. Moses Malone is averaging 28, Robert Parrish 23, David Thompson 21. Then there's a drop-off to Kelvin Ramsey at 13. They've got Kenny Carr 11, Mike Glenn 10, James Bailey 10. So they've got seven players averaging in double digits, but of those players, four of them are just barely in double digits. 20-point scorers, they have three of them. Look at the Kings, and you look at their scores. They have Bernard King averaging 29. They have Calvin Natt averaging 28. Mike Kaminsky is averaging 21. Andrew Toney's averaging 18, but he was averaging like 22 in Boston. So that number in just a sim or two has already dropped by 4 points a game. And I think by the time we get to the end of the season, that number is closer to 15 points a game, maybe even 14, because he's the fourth option. He's not going to get enough shots to come up with 20 points a game. Similarly, Vinnie Johnson's averaging 14.1. Alan Lavelle's averaging 10. But before those three got there, and again, most of that scoring came with the Celtics, it was three players for the Kings that were averaging those kind of numbers. Go over to the Lakers, and obviously Magic is averaging 30. Trapuco is averaging 20. That's fine. World Be Free is averaging 23. Jamal Wilkes averaging 19. That's not quite 20. James Donaldson averaging 18. That's not quite 20. Brad Davis is averaging 12. Nobody else is averaging anything. So even the Lakers, with a great passer like Magic, they can't sustain five guys averaging 20. They probably can't sustain four guys averaging 20. It's probably going to wind up being two and two guys kind of close. Other leading teams, let's look at the Bucks. The Bucks have Kevin McHale averaging 33, Lewis Lloyd 17, Phil Ford 15, Terry Tyler 13. So again, one guy averaging more than 20. The Trailblazers, whom everybody talks about as being the paragons of team depth, Greg Kelser is averaging 20.8. Bill Cartwright, 19.3. That's almost 20. James Worthy, 17.2. And that's not 20. John Drew, 15.3. Orlando Woolridge, 14.3. And now we're getting into, again, the not 20 area. So the Blazers have one player averaging 20 points a game. The Clippers, who had a magnificent offseason, are being led by Mike Mitchell with 27. Everybody's favorite player, Reggie Theus, 19. Rod Higgins, 18. James Edwards, 17. Rolando Blackton, 16. So again, you can't have five players averaging 20. One more just for kicks and giggles. Let's look at the Supersonics. The Supersonics have Dominique averaging 28. Great. Danny Shays, 17. That's not 20. Michael Thompson, 14. Not 20. You get the idea. I'll do one more just for the heck of it. You can go look at the Jazz. Kiki's averaging 29. Tom Chambers is almost 27. Dave Corzine, 12. You can't have five 20-point game scorers. There just isn't enough shots to go around. So, when I look at the Kings, and I got a message from Darth asking what did I think of his trade. I think it helps him by bringing back Lavelle, and I say that because Lavelle was the point guard that got him to the title last season. He lost Lavelle, and Sundhold wasn't enough to make that up. So getting Lavelle back, I think, makes his team stronger. What I would be concerned with, let's say, if I was Darth, is I loved the Tony pickup. Full disclosure, I went after Tony in the offseason. But the thing that I worry about with this acquisition is take a look at the efficiency, I guess, for Tony, for Vinnie Johnson. So Bernard King's true shooting percentage is 609. That's amazing. Gaminsky, 597. Tony's 581, so he's good. Calvin Knapp, 578. Lavelle, 570. Vinnie Johnson, who chucks a ton of shots, is down at 489, which isn't bad, but it's way worse than the rest of your team. So if I'm Chad, I'm trying to keep him off the floor. And the other thing to remember is when you pick up a player that takes a lot of shots, they're going to come from somewhere, and usually they're going to come from your other high-volume scorers. If you have just one high-volume scorer, usually a second high-volume scorer will be taking shots away from other people. But when you have three high-volume scorers, trying to add a fourth takes shots away from your other high-volume scorers. As long as they're on a similar level of efficiency, which, again, Tony is, I think it's fine. But when Vinnie Johnson gets on the floor and starts chucking, it lowers your efficiency considerably. And I think if I were in Darth's shoes, I would be trying to minimize my use of Vinnie Johnson. So we'll see whether or not he's able to do that. There was one other minor trade. It wasn't super impactful, but I think, as long as we're talking about trades, let's talk about that anyway. And that was Mitchell Wiggins going from the Suns to the Supersonics. This one I thought was a little bit interesting. I wasn't quite sure what the Suns were doing there. So they picked up Derek Smith. And Smith is a player that is basically on an expiring deal, hasn't played a minute this season, and the Suns weren't over the cap. And, if I compare that with what Mitchell Wiggins is doing, or maybe can do, if you prefer, for the Supersonics, Wiggins, excuse me, is a guy who is on a rookie deal, who has, quite a bit of potential. And I think, at least in my mind, that's the kind of guy that once you go into a rebuild, whether or not you like his fit with the team, you want to get something more than points in return for him. He's a valuable asset. I think the Sonics got a steal there. I do think it helps them defensively. The Suns have been dealing with a litany of injuries, so is this going to push them over the top this season? Or the Sonics, excuse me. But I do think that this bodes well for the Sonics. They have been doing a very good job of accumulating young talent and watching it blossom. Danny Shays is homegrown. Michael Thompson, who they traded for in the offseason, is not young, but he's not old either. And, you know, Ricky Green, same thing. And then they've got a bunch of guys that are 24, 25. So it's as you look at the Pacific Division, the Warriors and the Lakers, I think, are the teams best positioned for title runs this season. And then next season, it's going to become more difficult because the Warriors have two guys in Malone and Parrish that they're going to have to pay big money to. And they did lose Mike Mitchell in the offseason and weren't able to really replace that. They haven't shown a huge drop off. And I think the David Thompson pickup helps. But they're going to get very expensive, and their depth is older, quite frankly. You know, Thompson is 29. Bobby Jones is 32. James Bailey, 26, so he's not ready to start declining maybe just yet. Kelvin Ramsey, 25. I think he's a nice pickup, but you know, he's not on the level of what they lost. And we talked before about the Lakers. They're going to have some decisions to make financially this offseason, and I think they probably lose at least one of their players because they don't want to pay absolutely everybody. So the Warriors and Lakers, I think, are good for the next two seasons. The Trailblazers and the Supersonics, if you look at ages, seem like they're building to start peaking in 2 to 3 seasons. And so as the Warriors and Lakers maybe sunset a little bit, they're probably hoping to come in and take that. The Clippers are another team that is mostly, they're kind of in a weird spot. They have several 28-year-olds and then some 23, 24-year-olds. So they're a team they've got some guys that are on the ascension and some guys that are stagnant, which I would think would be exciting for them, except right now they're sitting in fifth place. And this just goes back to how brutal the Pacific is. I think in most other divisions, maybe not in the Central against the Bucks or the Midwest against the Kings, but I think the Clippers would have a good chance to lead most other divisions. They just happen to play in a division where you've got four other teams that are either built to win now or built to succeed now and win in a couple of years. You know, you look at the Central, there's really only two teams that are going for it now. That's the Bucks and the Bulls. In the Atlantic, I think the Nets are going for it now. I thought the Bullets were going for it now, and I liked the moves the Bullets made, which makes me now look at them and wonder, do I know what I'm doing? You know, I love the Larry Nance, Buck Williams pairing. I think John Lucas at point guard is good, but, you know, they're just not performing at 17 and 18, so... You know, maybe I shouldn't be as bullish on the Bullets as I am, but I'm starting to bleed now into talking about how I think teams are going to do, who's in, who's out. So let's table that for a second. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to break down, you know, who are the contenders, who has a puncher's chance, who are the playoff teams, and who's just in it for the draft picks. So we'll be back in a moment.
Just like your mother.
My temp. What? How do you know? You don't know anything about my mother?
No, I didn't.
You know?
I. Well,
what are you trying to say?
Okay. I knew your mother.
What? How did you know my mother?
I knew your mother.
What are you saying?
In France. I don't know. I had too much to drink. And
what are you trying?
No, I loved her for many hours. And she had you
old
out
man.
Of the wedlock.
Old man. Are you trying to tell me that.
Schmitty.
You're trying to tell me that you are my. My
say it,
Daddy.
Look, Mommy, there's a large creature eating me biscuit.
Whoa, kid, your breakfast tastes like gravel.
I would fancy something tasty.
Hey, try some of these.
Scrumptious nummies with meaty bits.
It's me new British Choco Puffies with real nuggets of blood sausage. Still turns the milk pink and tarty, and moms love it because it's got fluoride.
So me teeth don't fall out.
That's right, Snaggletooth.
I fancy you, Chucky.
Get some sun, Ringo. Hey, I'm off to France.
right, we are back. So as I promised going into the break, I wanted to kind of take a look at who are the true contenders, which I think I kind of already talked about. Who are the teams with a puncher's chance in the playoffs? Who are teams that I think will make the playoffs but are just not good enough to get over the hump? And then who is kind of in purgatory, probably not good enough to make the playoffs but has to rely on some lotto luck? And then who are the teams that are in the tank? So let's, as we usually do, let's start at the top. We'll start in the East and work our way over to the West. In the Atlantic, I said before the season started that I wanted to see how the Nets would do healthy. And I think looking at the Nets as they have come out of the gates this season, they've been mostly healthy. You know, they've been able to have the same starting lineup all 36 games they've played. And I think this is showing their potential. I also like the fact, and you know, this is, I don't remember whether they mentioned this in the offseason or not, but I do like the fact that they pulled Herb Williams out of the starting lineup and they've gone to Daryl Dawkins as their starting center. That lets them slot Cliff Robinson up at power forward, Dale Ellis at small forward, and I think, you know, drafting Dale really helped enable that for them. I think they felt kind of forced to use Herb Williams as center after drafting him. But I think he's in a better role as a backup. So, you know, the Nets, are they doing as well as I thought they might? I thought they had a chance to chase for the division. I didn't think they'd be leading the division. I thought the Bullets would still come out ahead, if I'm being honest. But you know, they have shown that they have the talent when they're healthy. So, you know, we've talked before about when to know when to blow things up and when to know when you have a legitimate excuse, what's real and what's not. And I think the last couple of seasons, the Nets can look to the injury report and say, this is why we're not winning, because it's been key players for long stretches of time. And when they are healthy, they are winning. And I think the best way to measure that is not the 21-15 overall record, but I would say it's the 9-11 road record. It's a team that can win almost 500 on the road, and that, as we know, is very difficult to do. You know, if you look across the league, there are four teams currently with a winning record on the road, and of those teams, let's see, I guess there's five teams, but two of those teams have a winning record on the road by a single game. So this is something where, you know, I like using road record as kind of a measure of how consistently a team can win. A winning team can generally break even on the road. And so, you know, the Nets, I think, are in a strong position. The Bullets, I still like the Bullets makeup. And if you're asking me, you know, why aren't they succeeding? I think this time I could point to injuries. You know, Julius Erving is currently out for almost a month. They've had to shuffle their lineups around. The only consistent starters for them have been Larry Nance, Buck Williams, and John Lucas, which I would have thought would have been enough. So if I was in charge of the Bullets, I would be keeping a very close eye on this season, and if I'm not able to get the outcome I want, the first player I think I'm shopping is probably Lucas, just because of his contract. But what this tells me is, if I can't win this season, this mix does not work. I think on paper, the Nance-Buck Williams pairing looks great with John Lucas to feed them, but obviously it hasn't worked. And since Buck and Larry Nance are on rookie deals, I think you hang on to them. And I think, you know, Lucas is 30. He's not on the timeline of the rest of the team. So Lucas, I think, is a player that they look to trade. And if I were them, I would also consider doing some all-star break training on Sadale 3, not so much for this season, but to jumpstart him for the next couple of seasons. They're going to want to turn to him sooner rather than later with Lucas, and it's going to take him a while to get ready. So I think the extra training that they have should probably go there. There's no point really in training a 33-year-old Dr. J. Abdul Jilani is 29. You know, they have a lot of guys outside of Williams and Nance who are already excellent that are older players in their rotation. So I think, you know, their priority needs to be to develop Sedale because Sedale is their up-and-comer. He is their future at point guard. He's not there yet. You do not want to put him in ahead of John Lucas. John Lucas is probably the better player next season, maybe even the season after that. But it's time to start looking at succession plans at point guard. And I think because the Bullets just haven't fit together and haven't won together really this season, I can't call them a contender. I think they have a puncher's chance, mostly because there are not a ton of great teams in the East. And they have the athleticism to match up with teams on any given night, but I don't think they are what you would call a contender at this point. The 76ers are going through another season where they're kind of in purgatory. I think it's interesting looking at their roster. They have kind of gone with a total revamp, and you know they're giving minutes to Danny Ainge, they're giving minutes to Walter Davis. I am kind of concerned right now with Danny Ainge. I know the Supersonics had high hopes for him when they drafted him. And he seemed like with all of the, you know, you look at all of the A's he has in jump shots and free throws and 3 points and handles and steals, you think, oh my gosh, this guy should be amazing. And as it turns out, he's been decent. You know, for his career, he's averaging almost 9 points a game, 3 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1 steal. This season, I think he's putting up, you know, other than scoring, he's probably putting up starters numbers at the shooting guard spot, but barely starters numbers. He's not a star. He is okay. And so then the question becomes, how long do you wait for Danny? You know, we're now 3 seasons in. He's 24 years old. And most of the guys in his draft class are doing amazingly, and he's just not. So I'm a little bit concerned if I'm the 76ers about, you know, Danny and what he's going to be. I don't think he's one of my franchise cornerstones, which I think they kind of thought he was when they brought him in. The Knicks have gone into a slide recently. They are, you know, putting out there that most of their big pieces are for sale. I think they are hoping to get for, say, Daryl Griffith, the type of return that the Suns got for Magic. And I don't know that that's out there. Number one, Daryl Griffith is not Magic. He's a fine player, but he's not a three-time MVP. So you're not going to get that same kind of return. Number two, he's a little bit undersized at the shooting guard. And number three, his numbers this year are way down because you're trying to split time grooming Trent Tucker. And if you're going to trade a player, at least early in the season, you need to showcase him. Giving him 26 minutes a game makes that 17 points a game look kind of garbage. You know, why would I want to trade for a guy who can't even score 20 a game? I think if you crank his minutes up to 36, like you have the last couple seasons, he's capable of being a 20-point-a-game scorer, but you need to showcase him if you're going to try to trade him. So will a trade get done? I don't know, because I don't know that anybody is going to give the Knicks a kind of package where they say, you know, we have to take this. And as long as they are still, you know, trying to hang around and trying to showcase guys and trying to develop their team, they're not going to be a lot of things. So I feel the Knicks are a team in purgatory. The Celtics are a clear team that is tanking. We talked about this before. They basically traded off all their assets at the beginning of the season to get Ralph Sampson. They traded off everything else that they had back to the Kings to get John Sundvold. Sundvold is not ready now. He's averaging 5 points and 4 assists in 24 minutes a game. Most of those came on the Kings, and he'll probably do a little bit better if given the minutes in Boston. But he's not ready for prime time yet. And in fact, if you look at the last couple of sims when he has been starting, that's been borne out. He's scored 10 points twice. He's scored more than 10 points once And by my count, he has played, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 games. So, oh, I take it back. He scored 13 against Atlanta. So if you've got four games out of 15 where you're coming in double digits and two of those games are 10-point games and he's getting, you know, 30-plus minutes a game, he's just not there scoring yet. Similarly, on the assist side, you know, we did see him have a couple of 12 and 13 assist games, but we also saw him have several two assist games. Seems like he's sitting around five or six. So he's raw. He's not there yet, but the Celtics are going to play him because they don't care that he's raw. They don't care if he's there yet. They want the lottery status, and they want Ralph Sampson to get as many shots as he can because they're trying probably to get him a Rookie of the Year vote. And Sampson has been amazing. I did not see a 61% shooting percentage coming. And I did not see averaging almost 30 and 12. So good on them for force feeding Sampson. I think his numbers will come back down to earth as he gets better teammates around him. But it's clear the Celtics are in the tank this season. In the Central, the Bucks are your odds-on favorites. I would say not just to win the East, but to win the whole thing. Despite the brash trash talk that the Kings have been putting up in the Discord chat, the Bucks added to their team considerably. They were a younger team that got better in the offseason. They got Michael Cooper back, and they've got him for a full season. And so now they are a real defensive powerhouse. They have gone defense while other teams have gone offense, but they haven't sacrificed offense. You know, if you look at their scoring margin, they're number one in the league. That's mostly based on being number one in defense, but they're also first in offense in the East and seventh in offense overall. You know, they're a little bit weak, maybe in their adjusted field goal percentage, which is 14th, but that's their worst rank overall. Everywhere else, they're at least, I guess, field goal percentage, they're 13th, but you know, other than shooting, they're among the top teams in the league raw. And if you look at the differentials, they're one of the best teams in the league in nearly every category. The Bucks are scary good on offense and defense. I think this season the title is Milwaukee's to lose. I'm going to call it right now. I know we talk about the strength of the Pacific and we talk about the Warriors and the Lakers and the Kings. I think the Bucks have a great shot at winning it all. And this is also backed up a little bit by their point differential at 13.6. Yeah, that's a ridiculous high number. They're just blowing teams off the floor. The Bulls are a team that I think has – they're not quite a contender because I think in the East there's really only one contender, and it's the Bucks. But the Bulls are a team that is somewhere between a contender and a puncher's chance, mostly on the strength of – you know, taking a playoff team with the Celtics roster last season and adding Alex English and adding Steve Johnson, I think that gives them exceptional depth. It gives them a team that is very, very strong. The thing that remains to be seen, and I know Logan has been putting it out there, is he has picks, and they're not all his own. The one thing that I think I would be worried about if I was him is right now he's sitting on his own picks in 84, 85, 86. Anybody who trades to the Bulls, we talked about this before, is trading for a pick that's going to be toward the end of the first round. The Bucks pick in 85 is toward the end of the first round. The only great asset that he has in terms of future assets is that 85 Celtics first and maybe one of his young players, but I don't think he wants to get rid of his young players because that's, you know, if you're trading away picks, why do you want to get rid of young players? You know, I know he's trying to, you know, at least if you look at his trade block, he's trying to bring in another big. And I think that's the right move because, you know, Eaton and Thompson are good. I think Steve Johnson is good. I think he could probably do with a three big rotation there, but I understand that he wants just a little bit more because sometimes I think Eaton and Thompson are a little bit foul prone. You know, Alex English and George Gervin are amazing on the rings. Craig Hodges doesn't see a lot of burn, but I think, you know, he's got, you know, enough three-point shooting to be interesting. I think Ray Williams is really the guy that probably should be getting more burn at both backup spots. And then Maurice Cheeks at the point guard. You know, the Bulls are a very solid team. We talked about windows before. Most of their core is between the ages of 27 and 31. So the Bulls are built to win now. And so I can see them moving off a couple of picks to bring in another player that's more or less in their prime to try to win now. And I think it's something they probably should do. Is it enough to catch the Bucks, I think, is the question. And that's going to be the question that the Bulls have to answer. And anybody that wants to trade with the Bulls has to answer is, does the player that I'm sending you give you a significantly increased chance to beat the Bucks? I think that's the question that the Bulls are trying to answer. And I think any team that is trying to trade with them has to bear in mind is what I'm sending them needs to be enough to help them. You know, does it guarantee they get past the Bucks? No, there are no guarantees. But does it need to give them a better chance? I think so. The Cavaliers, after making the playoffs last season, are kind of, I don't want to say coasting along, but they're moving along again with kind of the same group that they brought last season. And, you know, Johnny Davis has been out with a fractured leg. That's probably not helping them. He was, at least my understanding is, he was probably one of the most sought-after players in the offseason, which is a little bit ironic. Just given the fact that, you know, he's 28, you would have thought that, you know, you would have seen maybe a little more, a little more interest in guys that were, you know, Blues, but maybe people went after Davis. And again, this is just conjecture. Maybe people went after Davis. I know I did. I know a few other people, you know, have talked about it. I think he was a player that people identified as, you know, not a max player. Maybe I could sneak in and get him, you know, but I think John Paxson is a backup point guard, and because of the injury, he's been forced to start. And I think that has not been helpful. I think the Cavaliers will get better once Davis gets back, but I don't think they're on the level of the Bulls. I don't think they're on the level of the Bucks. I don't think they're on the level of the Nets. And so if I were in their shoes, I'm probably looking to make a trade. The question is, what do they have to trade? And that's, I think, where, you know, we talked a little bit before about Magic. They don't have their 84 draft pick. So the only thing they have to trade in terms of future assets is an 86 draft pick. And then they've got young players. Maybe Paxson is the piece that they move, but the max contracts to Jim Paxson and Rick Mahorn really limit what they can do. I mean, they're over the cap. You know, maybe Brian Winters is a piece that people are interested in, but at 31, as a yellow, he's going to be, you're going to have to find a team that values him for a very specific reason, and I don't know that that's out there. So I think the Cavaliers would love to trade, and I think they are a lock for the playoffs. I don't know if they get better. To me, the Pacers are the most interesting team in the East. I have thought that, you know, the Pacers bringing in Kareem was a nice move that maybe extended their window, and then Kareem is out with a concussion for another 2 months. And the Pacers have been on a, I won't say a slide, but they've been on an uphill climb pretty much since the beginning of the season. I thought the Pacers would be 4 or 5 games over 500 at this point. They're 4 or 5 games under 500. I think they are probably going to be able to make the playoffs maybe as a sixth seed. I think, you know, built around Joe Barry Carroll and Adrian Dantley, they probably thought they could do better. And we've been talking for a couple of seasons about how that is a high-level duo around which they can build. And they've been pretty consistent up until now, but this season it doesn't seem to be there. And maybe we should have seen it coming. You know, in 1980, they finished with 58 wins. In 81, 53. In 82, 45. If that trend continues and they wind up at, say, you know, 38, 39 wins this season, I think it's time for the Pacers to blow it up. You know, what they have are two exceptional players in their primes in Jobari Carroll and Adrian Dantley. What they don't have is a lot of support, and they don't have a lot of players that are young and up and coming that I think can add to that and push the team upwards. And I don't think they're bad enough to get high draft picks. So if they win the lottery, you know, maybe, you know, they get a miracle jump, they can get a good player. But I worry that the Pacers are headed toward, you know, that middle ground where you're not good enough to win a title. You're also not good enough, or you're not bad enough to get a high pick, and you're just kind of stuck. You know, you make the playoffs one year, you miss the playoffs, make the playoffs, miss the playoffs. Kind of being in that middle ground, I think, I hate to say it, but, you know, it might be time to start looking at blowing this team up. And with, I think they hoped Kareem would be the short-term piece, and, you know, his recent injury just doesn't help. But even before the injury, they weren't going to get there, and I think now the injury kind of crystallizes things. I think the Pacers are the team most likely to make a move to sell off a big piece and try to get younger. That's just how I see it. Again, I think they're probably a playoff team if they stay the course, but they're a fifth or sixth seed, and they're not going to go past the first round, I don't think. Next up is the Pistons. They're 14-21. They're still built around Terry Cummings. They're still trying to get better. I thought their pickup of Dennis Johnson in the offseason would give them a little bit of more of a boost than it has. Obviously, I was mistaken. And the Pistons are in a spot where I think they would like to see themselves get better. But I think this is a team that you could see, or at least I could see anyway. I can see them trying to flip, you know, Michael Ray Richardson or Dennis Johnson. I can see them trying to flip some of their older players to get younger assets, because this team, when you look at all their draft picks and their players, it's a team that needs to be built around the Terry Cummings timeline. They're not ready to win now, so all of their players that are, let's say, over 25 years old are players that they should probably be trying to move to get younger. You know, they've got the Pistons pick, the Nuggets pick, the Jazz pick this season. Those aren't going to be great. The Hawks pick next season might be. Their own pick's going to be good. So the Pistons are going to be adding talent. This is a team that is clearly, you know, they have a clear direction, and that is they are building youth and they're building around Cummings. They're three or four seasons away as they let these picks play out and they let their players develop. But I know where they're going. They're not going deep this year. Then there's the Hawks. And the Hawks, I think, are a tough position. The Syndicate had to pick things up after a couple of seasons of neglect. And I think it shows. I think, you know, the acquisitions of Dan Issel and Dan Roundfield were good swings this season, and Roundfield has been quality. I think Clark Kellogg acquisition was good. That's been fine. The problem is Elo isn't ready yet. Derek Harper isn't ready yet. And so you've got a team, again, that's on two timelines. You've got Roundfield and, you know, Elvin Hayes and Dan Issel that are good now and getting worse. You've got Derek Harper and Craig Elo and Clark Kellogg who are bad now. Clark Kellogg, I guess, is okay, but, you know, they're bad now. They're going to be good in 3 to 4 seasons. Jeff Ruland, looks like he must have gotten hit in training camp. I remember him as having a higher potential. So, you know, he's a guy that I think has not lived up to his draft position. Not that he's been bad per se, but, you know, for his career, he's averaging 12 and 8.5 rebounds. You can't do that as the number two pick in this league right now. You know, as a number two pick, you need to be maybe not a star in your free season, but by your third season, you need to be doing something. And Ruland just hasn't done that. He's a decent center. He's okay, but okay isn't good enough. And so I think probably not this season, because they're not, you know, they're one of the teams in contention for a top pick. And I think they're willing to just kind of let things ride. But I do suspect as we get to the offseason, you're going to see you know, hey, Dan Roundfield is on the block, Junior Bridgman's on the block, Mike Evans is on the block. They're going to try to sell off pieces to try to get younger, and they should. I was kind of surprised, honestly, that they picked up Roundfield, because I didn't think his age meant that he was on their team's timeline. If they can flip him for younger pieces, then good on them. That was a great move. If they keep him and they run through his contract and they're never able to get off the ground, then, you know, maybe not the best of moves, because it prevented them from doing other stuff. We'll take another quick break. I've kind of already talked about the Pacific, so I'm going to speed run through that. We'll come back and do the Midwest. We're already close to an hour, so I'm going to try to wrap this quickly. But just one very quick break here while I go grab a drink. Okay, we are back. In the Midwest, I think I've already talked about the Kings quite a bit. I think they're one of the contenders. I'm not 100% sure if Vinnie Johnson is the right fit with them. I think they're going to win the Midwest. I don't think it's going to be by as much as they think it is. I think the Jazz are going to keep it close down the stretch, but I do ultimately think the Kings win. And then, as we've seen in the playoffs, Dark is a furious game planner and will try to make the most of his matchups. He's going to have to go through at least the Warriors. He may have to go against the Lakers and Trailblazers. Like, all four of those teams are going to have to face at least one and possibly both of each other at some point. So that's going to be your real bloodbath. And that's why I say the Bucks are the bigger favorites, because I don't see them running into a team that can beat them until the finals. Whereas in the West, the first round matchups might be walkovers, but after that, it's going to be absolute death. And so you're going to have multiple opportunities to be eliminated no matter who you are. The Jazz, I think, have done a very nice job of building around Kiki and Chambers. You know, most of their supporting cast are 26, 27, 28. It's a team that is built to win now. I think they would like to be a little bit better than they are, but I don't know that there's an easy move to get them there. I really like their balance. I like their construction. Basically, the Jazz are a strong playoff team, and if they weren't in a conference with four juggernauts, I would give them a chance to win the title. As it is, I think they're the fifth best team, maybe the sixth best if you look at the Sonics, but they're not quite the heavyweights. And so I think, you know, as I mentioned, you know, the Kings, Warriors, Lakers, and Blazers, they're going to have two rounds of death with each other. The Jazz are going to have three rounds of death going against one or more of those teams. So I just think there's too many opportunities to slip up for the Jazz to make it through. The Nuggets are on the build back after blowing up a championship squad. I think for the most part, they are trying to build around the Clyde Drexler timeline. I think they would love to find a big. I don't know that that exists out there for them this season. They'll probably see what they can do in the draft. Record-wise, I would say they're in purgatorio, because they're not going to be quite good enough to make the playoffs. They're not going to be bad enough to win the lotto unless they get incredibly lucky. But they have several players already on the roster that are young and getting better. So they just need to snipe one big man in free agency or come up with one big man in a trade, and they're ready to go. They do have three first-round picks this year. I think the Bullets pick is probably the best of those among the Kings and the Trailblazers. I can see them trying to cash in multiple picks to improve their big man spot. Will that work? Not sure. You know, again, I think the Kings and Trailblazers picks probably, say, pick 15 and below. So they're definitely not lottery picks. But it does give them multiple cracks at trying to bring in a big if they want to go that route. And we'll get to a draft preview probably in the next one. The Rockets are they're kind of drifting aimlessly. They did bring back Otis Birdsong in the off season. They brought back Artis Gilmore. I think they need to be trying to move on from Artis and probably from Birdsong as well. And maybe they should be exploring whether or not they can get for Bird the same kind of deal that the Suns got for Magic. And I think for them it's a little more pressing because Bird's a couple years older than Magic. And he's already been hit in training camp once, we know. And the Rockets aren't on the cusp of winning. And so I think at that point, you know, right now they've got a team with, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8 players. So if anybody gets injured, they're going to have to sign players off of waivers. They're just, you know, again, they're drifting. They're kind of aimless. And they really need to start making some moves to put a direction on this team. And they're just going to have their players kind of waste away. And that would be unfortunate. The Mavericks are another team that ripped everything apart last season. I think they hoped that Doc Rivers would perform better than he did this, or better than he has so far this season. I think they saw him and thought, you know, especially with a team where your number one offensive option was either Jay Vincent or Bill Laimbeer, Doc Rivers could be a great number three option. What they found is he can pass, and he's otherwise just a guy, you know, averaging 13 points a game on 43.8% shooting is not great. They're going to need to figure out, is Doc Rivers the solution for the future? If he is, what can we do to improve him? Because at least to my eyes, you know, if I'm looking at all of his ratings versus his potentials, it seems like he might be, well, let's put it this way. He's probably close to capped in a lot of his potentials. You know, jump shooting, he can probably get better at. You know, he's got a current rating of 50. He has a B rating. But inside, he's got a 63 and a B potential. He's already in the band. Free throws, 75 to B, in the band. 3-point, in the band. Handles, in the band. Passing, he's got a 77, has an A. So he could get a little better in passing. Offensive rebounding, 29 D, in the band. Defensive rebound, 32 D, in the band. Post defense, 31 D in the band. Perimeter defense, 66 B in the band. Seals, 87 in the band. You get the idea. Blocks, 40 C. That's not quite in the band, but you know he's very, very close to. He's got to be close to his potentials. Maybe he has a potential difference of 10 in one or two areas, but generally he is what he is now, and he's just not, I think, what they needed for what they hoped. I think was going to be a number two guy. Jay Vincent, I think, has been a pleasant surprise for them. I think that's a player that, you know, Darth wouldn't mind necessarily getting back, although his field goal percentage, you know, he makes a lot of shots, but he takes a lot of shots to get there. I think if I were them, I would be looking to move Jay Vincent, you know, advertise him as a scorer and neglect the fact that he's a little bit of an inefficient scorer. And maybe try to get some defense out of there. You know, if you look at what their big problems are right now, they're one of the worst teams in the league in shooting. They're one of the worst teams in fouls. They're one of the worst teams in turnovers. Obviously, you know, Doc doesn't help there. They're last in the league in scoring. So, you know, what do they need? I think the answer is probably one of these shooting guards that handles like a point guard. Maybe they can find that out there on the market. Maybe they can't. You know, Craig Elo from the Hawks would be great. I just don't think the Hawks are interested in what the Mavericks have to offer. I think the Mavericks are a team that probably, you know, they've got a shot at winning the lottery, but they're probably content to stay where they are. They'll still get some good picks. And I think they're happy to do that. They seem to be building with an eye toward the future. When your oldest player is Bill Laimbeer, I think, you know, you've got time to do that. Finally, in the Midwest, you've got the Spurs. Again, this is the Mark Aguirre, Isaiah Thomas crew. Eddie Johnson had a nice offseason. This team, to me, feels like it should be better than it is. And this is just my feel here without doing a deep, deep dive. This looks like one of those teams that is going to score 120 a game and give up 130 a game. I think the big ask or the big look or the big training focus in the offseason for the Spurs, needs to be defense. They have a lot of needs. Rebounding is a big one. But defense seems to be, at least to me, where I think they can make the biggest difference. We'll see how it goes. Maybe they could shift up their game plan a little bit and make it better. I don't know. Hard to tell. I think the Mark West experiment has not gone the way they wanted. I think they would have hoped he could at least score 10 a game. You know, he's averaging 9.6 and 8 rebounds. Maybe they're fine with that because that gives more shots to Aguirre and Johnson. I don't know. I just think, you know, this is a team that's in dire need of a true big man and probably a wing defender before they're going to get any better. Good news for them is they have as good a chance as anybody of getting a defensive beast in Michael Jordan in the offseason. And then we'll blitz through the Pacific Division. I've mentioned before, I think the Warriors are built to win now. They probably have the best chance of coming out of the West. But they're going to have to face either the Kings, Lakers, or Blazers probably in round two, or a team that was capable of beating them. And that's not going to be easy. And then they have to face another one of those teams in the conference finals. And then you got to go against the Bucks in the finals. I think the Warriors are in the mix. I wouldn't call them the favorites to win it. I still think that's the Bucks. Lakers, I really like what the Lakers have done. I think the Warriors still have the inside track to win the division simply because the Lakers couldn't pick up Magic until after the 15th. But it wouldn't surprise me to see the Lakers run the Warriors down. I think the Lakers are the team that is the scariest right now because they're not quite a known quantity. I think they're going to have an expensive offseason, but for the short term, I like the Lakers' chances maybe slightly better than the other teams, but, you know, it's a couple of coin flips among that. Blazers, again, I talked about it before, they're consistent, they're deep. I will say I think the Blazers' floor is higher than most of these teams, but I think their ceiling is lower than most of these teams. We've never seen the Blazers turn it on in the playoffs, maybe in the first season, interestingly, without Bernard King. And maybe that gave them a false sense of, hey, we can do this without a superstar. They've been trying to do it without a superstar since, and every time they run into a superstar, that knocks them out. So, if the Blazers can make a move for a superstar, that's probably the missing piece. I think their depth is okay afterward. I do think they could use a better point guard than Lester Connor. The Supersonics, they're going to blame their woes on injury, which, you know, may be fair. I think also there's a little bit of underperformance from Michael Thompson. I think they would like to see more from him. Ricky Green, I think, is underperforming a little bit at the point guard spot. I just think that the Supersonics have a good team. The problem is it's an expensive team. They're going to have a hard time moving things around. And this is another team where, you know, Michael Thompson is coming up for big money in the offseason. I think they'll give it to him, but then that puts them in the weird position of having a team where, you know, Michael Thompson is currently 28. Ricky Green is currently 29. Then you look at their other key pieces. Darwin Cook is 25. Dominique is 24. Danny Shays is 24. Are they trying to win now, or are they trying to win in the future? If they're trying to win now, they're just not quite good enough to keep up with the Warriors and the Lakers. If they're trying to win in the future, they're going to be fighting with the Clippers and the Blazers. So I think they would like to make a couple more moves. I do like the moves that they made this offseason. But it does seem that in the West, every year you're going to have to make some sort of a move to get better. Clippers, you know, this is another team I mentioned that I like. It's a team with a mix of midterm and long-term players. They're going to be expensive. And I think if I was the Clippers, I'd be a little concerned that I haven't been able to break through and, you know, get into the upper echelons. I mentioned before, I think the Warriors, Lakers, Blazers, Kings are your playoff locks. The Jazz, the Sonics, and the Clippers are three teams fighting for two spots. I think the Jazz make it, and that leaves the Clippers and Sonics fighting for the last spot. So which of them gets in, I'm not sure. But the two teams are very, very similarly built. The Suns are kind of in free fall right now after trading away Magic. It's to be expected. Maybe they haven't fallen as fast as, you know, they might have liked. But I think as the season goes on, we'll see them trade off more pieces. And even though they're not in the running for a top pick right now, we know it's much easier to sell off pieces and make your team worse than it is to make it better. So the Suns are a team that I can definitely see quickly moving into, you know, one of these, you know, 30 or 40 game losing streaks if they have the motivation to do so. So there you have it. That's kind of my view of the league as it looks about halfway through the season. I do think there are probably one or two more big moves coming. Just as I mentioned, I think the Pacers are a team that wants to probably make a move to get out of stuff. The Hawks are a team that might want to sell something off. The Pistons might want to sell something off. Knicks might want to sell something off. Cavaliers probably want to buy. Bulls want to buy. It's just a matter of finding the right buyers. I do think, you know, all of these teams that are looking for draft picks in deals, it's going to be very, very hard until after the 84 season and after the 84 draft. I think we're seeing a lot of stickiness this season. I do think, you know, trading is going to be hard. This season is going to get easier next season, but we'll see how it goes. So that's it. And we'll, this will probably be a short week since, you know, normally I try to do these on Fridays and today's Thursday. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, enjoy everyone, and we'll see you all on the next Chat with a Cat.